Welcome to another edition of the Star Blades podcast. I'm Chris Holt, and with me as usual are Blades writers James Shield and Danny Hall. Thankfully, the international break is at an end after a pretty rubbish couple of weeks for the home nations, unless you're Scottish, of course. We'll have a look back over all of that, including some chat around the United players who actually were playing at Bramall Lane this week for England under-21s, of course. And obviously, we'll look ahead to the return of the Championship action with United set for a home doubleheader against Birmingham and QPR in the next, the next week or so. This is the Star Blades podcast, and yes, football is back. Rising, lads.
Bring it on.
Rising. We're all ready for it. Nobody.
Up. You've got me pumped up there, Chris.
I'm pumped up myself. I was a bit tired this morning, and now I'm ready for action.
That's it. Much
speech,
put it on Saturday.
I know, should do.
Just play that.
Get me standing on top of the physio's table in the middle of the dressing room. Like Friday Night Lights. Right. We spoke about this last week. International breaks are a bit boring, really, aren't they? From our point of view, I don't know anybody who really likes them. But regardless of that, Sheffield United's players, some of them have been away with their respective countries this week. Who have we had? Sandberg's been away with Norway. John Egan has turned into a prolific goal scorer, apparently, while he's been away. So missed it. Well, Anel went and very promptly came back, which we will go into a bit later on. And then, of course, our talented young bunch of England under-21s were in action on Tuesday night at Bramall Lane, which also included a German under-21 international as well. So we're going to wrap this all up pretty quickly and give a bit of a brief on what's been going on. What can we take from this? I mean, my take is I don't think John Egan scores enough goals for Sheffield United, and he's 2-2 over the international break there. So that's potentially something. I know we'd spoken about it before, about the lack of goals from the back when you consider Anel Amadovic has probably prepared that a little bit, but certainly from Egan and Basham's point of view, they have admitted to us before that they probably don't get on the score sheet often enough, and particularly when you see Egan's finishes against Scotland and Armenia this week, it kind of suggests that we should be expecting maybe a little bit more from him.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. I noticed you've brushed over George Baldock playing for Greece against Northern Ireland as well.
Yeah,
Chris.
I actually forgot about that because
about it or just put it to the back of your mind, is it?
He's as Greek as I am. That's what I forgot.
I think I don't know what you guys think, but before every international break, Paul Heckingbottom always talks about the fact that he thinks it's a real learning experience for his players, and it's almost like an educational moment, an educational period for them, as well as a very proud one, of course, representing their countries. And he talks about, you know, the fact that it opens their mind to different ways of playing, different ways of approaching the game, different ways of looking at it, and of course a different voice with other head coaches and managers in charge of the national teams. And I just wonder if, when you look at with what you were talking about John Egan there, if that might always, you know, almost be the case as well for Paul, because it could just be a flash in the pan. We don't know. But is there something that the Republic of Ireland are doing, particularly at set piece situations, for example, that allows John Egan to get forward and score those goals? Because you're right, they were both, you know, superb finishes. We've seen that before. I must admit, I can't remember exactly, but I think it was against Birmingham, wasn't it? Who, of course, were coming up at Bramall Lane, that I think John, I might be wrong on that, but scored an exceptional goal against them not so long back. But it was a good break, I thought, overall. I mean, obviously, apart from Anel coming back before Bosnia's games against Montenegro and Romania, that's a real blow, and we'll get onto that shortly. But other than that, no, I thought it was a really constructive break. Obviously, Rayan, Brewster, Tommy Doyle, James McAtee and Raider Kadra all featured in the under-21s game between England and Germany at Bramall Lane. I thought Raider had a decent game in that one. He started for Germany. The other three, the other United trio, came on in the second half. And, of course, Rayan went into that game on the back of a brace against Italy. I think the really interesting one for me, though, as well, of course, was Sander Berge starting both of Norway's defeats against Slovenia and Norway. And I know Stally Solbakken and the Norway manager thinks that Sander's too good for the championship. Well, he's obviously not too good for the Norway team, but I think with Stally's side losing both of those matches, especially when you've got Erling Haaland in your squad, I think perhaps Stally, and I know I am having a bit of a dig here, wants to focus on what's going on within his own side a little bit more than he is on events at Bramall Lane and results for United.
Yeah, Danny, I'll not pronounce his name. James has done it emphatically there. He's had a wee bit too much to say for himself in the past, hasn't he? And
yeah, especially as someone who knows full well what it takes to succeed or not succeed in English football.
Yeah, exactly.
Judging by his past. But yeah, as James says, apart from the injury, which is always the big caveat of an international break, isn't it? Everyone always... I'm in that camp as well. I think it's really a positive thing for players to go away on international duty. First and foremost, if you take it back to its basics, it means that you've got some damn good players in your team. Do you know what I mean? And that obviously means that you're doing well as a club and individually as well. You know, if you have, you know, players that international teams are not that bothered about, I think that's not a position you want to be in, is it? So to have stars that are jetting off around the world, let's look at Illerman, you know, players that you spoke about, players learning under managers. I mean, Illerman training and playing alongside, you know, Sadio Mane, trying to get past Koulibaly in training, trying to score past Mendy and goal. Do you know what I mean? That's only going to make him a better player, isn't it? And kind of spur him on.
Their team.
They can pick up from those. The team's incredible.
Senegal's team is a who's who European football, isn't it?
Yeah, it's mad. So anything that he can pick up from those, you know, will make him a better player. I don't think it's a coincidence that he's kind of started the season so well after going away in the summer. I don't think it's entirely down to that, but I don't think you can discount that either. And yeah, we spoke to George about this over the summer. He said, like, you know, kind of different tactics that you learn under, the managers you work with, the players you work with, different experiences, you know, they're all kind of positive things. So I'm in the camp of international football. Getting your players called up is a good thing. Although it's a damn long 2 weeks without any club football, and when players come back injured, that's obviously the downside of it. So it's about managing the risk, isn't it? But you know, overall, I think it's a positive thing for Sheffield United and for the players involved.
George did play quite well, to be honest. I didn't want to go into it too much. He did.
You've just got to get over the fact Ollie Norwood doesn't play for Northern Ireland anymore, Chris.
Oh, I know. They certainly could have done with him. Yeah, Bulldog did play quite well. It's interesting, Bulldog, because I imagine it could be quite difficult going into, at his age, going into international football. I mean, I don't know what his Greek is like. I can't imagine it's very good, and it may start and end with the contents of his local restaurant's menu. But you know, he did seem to have fit in quite well there, and that's a difficult task in itself. So, and I suppose if nothing else, it improves communication on the pitch because you're having to deal with movement and instinctive stuff rather than vocally, which, you know, is obviously going to be a bit difficult. We'll move on from that if there's enough talk about Northern Ireland losing. A little bit more on the under-21s in the week. James, you were there. Decent crowd. It's good to have the under-21s here in the city. Obviously helped by the fact. I'm always a bit cynical about this because I think they have a look at who's likely to be in the squad and move the under-21s around, which... it's fair enough. Obviously, there was quite a lot of Sheffield United interest in the under-21 squad at the minute, so for good reason they had it here. How did the three lads get on, or four, if we include Rita Kadra for Germany?
In that match against Bramall Lane, I mean, obviously it was a shame in a way, talking about that, you've touched on that sentimental aspect that sometimes coaches can bring towards selections for under 21 games. And Lee Carsley, who of course spent a really brief period on Sheffield United's coaching staff under David Weir, he was asked about this following the game. Realised what the point of the question was. He said, "So you mean, should I have played Rian and started Rian against Germany at Bramall Lane rather than when England beat Italy in Pescara, I think it was, and Rian scored twice?" And he said no. So this sort of answers your question, because he said, "I just felt that was the right way to do things. I felt there were things that Rian could bring to the starting 11 against Italy that perhaps he wanted to focus on something different when Germany came to Bramall Lane on Tuesday." So that was good to hear. And Rian scored twice against the Italians, who have got a really, really good, strong under-21 side as well when you go through their roster. So that should do his confidence the world of good coming back to Sheffield United. He keeps saying, I mean, we've done some stuff with him this week in the Star, and he keeps talking about the fact, you know, the thing I haven't scored this season isn't weighing too heavily on my shoulders. And the great thing is, I don't think it's weighing too heavily. And I do think Rian's really matured, not only as a player, but as a person since coming to Bramall Lane. I've noticed a real difference in sort of terms of how he conducts himself around the football club. So that's good to see. But of course he will be bothered about the fact that he hasn't scored for United this season. So that will do his confidence the world of good. James McAtee and Tommy Doyle, of course, have already been sort of on the England radar in the past. So thought they came on with Rian towards the end of the game. It becomes a little bit chaotic, doesn't it, at that point? So it's difficult to judge individual performances, but I thought there were some good flashes from them. You could see James McAtee in particular trying those little slide rule passes through to a striker when he emerged towards the end of the game. And Raider started for Germany. It was good to see his family had come over for the game as well. You could see him talking to them in the stand afterwards. And he did well. He was drifting out wide. He was drifting back into the middle. He had a really good battle with Max Ahrens, which we may well see again, obviously, in the not-too-distant future when Sheffield United play Norwich. And he had an opportunity to score in the second half. Ahrens just managed to get back and get a toe in there. But I thought it was a really, really positive experience for him as well. The one thing I will just say, just really quickly, I think teams like the England under-21s, even England, you can look at the capacity and say, is it possible? I don't know. But even England, when they go on the road, they should be coming to Sheffield more often. It's the home of football. I've droned on about it in the past that we don't bang the drum about that enough. It's the word Sheffield and the word football, they should be absolutely synonymous. They should just roll off the tongue together. And I think if the people in this region managed to bang that drum even more, remind people in London, remind people at the FA, who should know anyway, but they're all of an age. And I think sometimes it does get forgotten. It does get overlooked by the sort of the big brash money sort of situations that we can see elsewhere in the country, and by the glamour of, say, sort of Manchester having two teams in the Premier League and Liverpool. Sheffield should be getting more of these games. Of course, I will say they should be staged at Bramall Lane rather than Hillsborough because, again, Bramall Lane is such a historic old stadium. It's got a number of firsts to its name. But why not Hillsborough as well? These games should be coming to Sheffield on a much more regular basis than they are.
I suppose the success of the Women's Euros in the summer suggests that there's probably an argument for, I know they like to take things on the road, but there's probably an argument, given Sheffield's geographical position, for having the city here as a kind of footballing hub for the next level down. You know, so play more women's matches here, play the under-21s matches here, under-19s or whatever, and have Sheffield as being like the hub of, you know, the next level down from the England men's team.
Yeah, it's a really good idea, and it's something they should look at. And the FA should study that really closely. But as I've said, and there's no criticism intended here. I'm not pointing the finger at any individuals in particular, but the city, the region, should be talking about this an awful lot more. We've got the Rugby League World Cup coming up at Bramall Lane soon as well. It's clearly a venue that's capable of staging big events. And I will say this, all credit to Dave McCarthy down at Sheffield United, who I know has been sort of instrumental in putting these big events together. He won't talk about himself. He won't put his head above the parapet too often, but well done to Dave for bringing these great occasions to the football club. But it should be happening more often. And let's just shout about it. Let's shout about our city more. I think other cities do that really well, and yet they've not got half of what we can offer here in Sheffield. And I think sometimes we've just got to remind people about that rather than just think, well, we know we've got that here. Let's just shout about it. Unfortunately, we live in that sort of modern multimedia PR age. There's an awful lot of noise out there. Things won't come to you. So, you know, hopefully Sheffield can begin to be a little bit more aggressive in its marketing as well.
There we go. Thereby ends the party political broadcast from the Sheffield party headed by James Shield. Danny, away from international football this week, obviously the younger Sheffield United teams were in action. There's no stopping for them. And a little bit of a boost in terms of injury news, given that Billy Sharp, who of course did kind of make a comeback before the international break, but he's put a few more minutes in the legs, as they say, for the under-21 stroke under-23s, which we haven't quite decided on yet. Bogle as well in the team there. Given the injury issues that Sheffield United have had, it's nice to have a bit of good news on that front, isn't it?
I'm not sure how to follow that speech from the new mayor of Sheffield, by the way, but I'll give it a try.
Very unlikely mayor of Sheffield.
As you mentioned there, really, really, you know, timely and really quite rare injury good news as well for Sheffield United. With the, you know, I think we've all filed into Shirecliffe this season for the press conference. I kind of thought, who's going to be next? You know, the question about any injury news, you're thinking, God, who's it going to be? Who's going to be the next? Victim to that remarkable injury crisis. I think every team will point to injuries and say, oh, you know, we've been hard done to this season. But I think Sheffield United have got a case to kind of point at the, especially the kind of areas that have been affected as well, you know, to have such a stockpile. I think, you know, the recruitment team and the coaching staff did well to kind of strengthen that area, which is such a key area. Left side of defence, left wing back. And then to have all but one of them decimated by injury is quite remarkable, really. To have some quite rare and, you know, timely injury boosts, we said, you know, he said Billy came back at Preston for a bit, but, you know, that's just, I think he played like 5 minutes or something. But to have that sort of 45 minutes for the 21s, 23s, whatever they were called, used to be reserves in our days, didn't they? Used to be the good old-fashioned stiffs. To have the 45 minutes under the belt, as you say, will be a big boost, because it's a big few months for Billy, isn't it? As we said in the paper, we did a piece with him earlier this week about his contract. Obviously, his contract's up next summer. He's desperate to... He knows, as well as anyone, the only way he's going to earn a new one is by, you know, playing games and scoring goals, which is what he's always done. So I personally wouldn't discount him from doing that. Obviously, he's got to get in the team first. You know, with those in, kind of in front of him doing so well. But it's a big few months for Billy ahead. And then Jaden, of course, spoke about George and how good he's been. We mentioned it last week on the podcast. I think he's been one of the most impressive players this season so far. But Jaden, as we saw last season, brings qualities of his own. You know, when both of those two are fully fit, I think that's a really strong area for United down the right. Both of them bring different qualities. I think if you combine the two and made one player out of them, that'd be some player, and it definitely wouldn't be at Sheffield United. So I think that'll bring a lot of strength to that area, kind of push George, maybe, you know, enable Paul to rest and rotate the pair when Jaden's fully fit.
That's the most important thing, that aspect of it, really, isn't it? Because, you know, George is in good form, but I mean, the fixture list and the you know, the schedule that they have, it can't just flog him, because, you know, he can't keep up that level every single week, twice a week, particularly as we're kind of creeping into... Well, I suppose there's going to be a break. I forgot about that. But even still, you know, games are being crammed in the short short spaces of time, and you can't just expect George Baldock to play at the level that he's played at for every single week whenever he's without having it raised.
Yeah, and it's something Paul spoke about in the summer. You know, he said I will rotate throughout this period. But the only problem is that he's kind of had that taken out of his hands, hasn't he? Because he don't have the players to do it. But I think also you can't underestimate the sort of psychological impact that having Jaden behind George will have. I mean, he's been good as it is, but you know that on Saturday, number two, you know, barring another injury crisis or anything like that, George Baldock will play because there's no one else to fit in there. Having Jaden as well, I think, kind of puts that little seed of doubt almost in his mind, where he thinks, I have to be even better than I have been so far this season, because if not, I've got a damn good player behind me who'll take my place.
He does, because he's Bogle seems like he could pick up the headlines a little bit more, because he's more likely to score than George. I think that's a fair thing to say. He's got a few more goals in his locker than George does, so it kind of puts a little bit of extra pressure, as you say, on George to perform in the way that he can. Because let's be fair, he's not going to score hardly any. You know, he hasn't done it up to now. He's not going to turn into a prolific goal scorer at this stage.
When he does, they're not bad goals, though, are they?
No, yeah, so when they come around, they're worth watching.
He's certainly quality over quantity, George.
And the third one as well, I think, is, you know, I've looked at there a little bit. Adam Davis as well coming back. We said that before about Wes. You know, this is nothing, this is not doubting any pit of their professionalism or thinking that, you know, if they've got no one behind them, they'll sack it off or not put it in. But I think having that quality, and again, with respect to Jordan Amissa, obviously, who played, was it a little bit of senior football away at Luton for his debut? But he's not going to, you know, push Wes for his shirt, is he, on a Saturday? Because he's hardly played any football. But Adam, having that international quality, you know, dependable backup sort of goalkeeper, I think will push Wes. And obviously, if there is an issue again, like we saw at Luton, you know, having someone of Adam's quality and experience coming in could only strengthen United as well. So three good bits of injury news, very welcome, very overdue and very rare as well.
I mean, I don't want to jinx it, but we'll find out today the actual state of the squad and any potential injury news which may have cropped up since we last spoke to Paul Heckingbottom, who will take his press conference a little bit later on this afternoon. Among that, we will hopefully find out the absolute extent of Anil Amanovic. Amanovic's injury. As we look ahead to, there are no easy games in the Championship, so a doubleheader against anybody is going to be difficult. Birmingham and QPR have their own troubles to seek. QPR have been okay. Birmingham, everything's just mad down there at the minute. But what are we expecting? James, we'll start with you. How do you think, given that, obviously, Anil's definitely going to be out, I would have thought, unless there's been some kind of miracle over the past week or so. What are you expecting the back line to look like, certainly on Saturday at least?
I actually think this is a really tricky one to answer. And the reason why I say that is Paul Heckingbottom and indeed Stuart McCall, when he's done press conferences, have always been very, very open about the fact that they respect the opposition as well. Now, QPR, they're six in the table at the moment. I know Birmingham are 17th, but they're coming into this match on the back of a three-game unbeaten run. So they're clearly in a decent bit of form at the moment. Those two, Paul and Stuart, have always mentioned about how they do look at the opposition. You'll get a lot of managers tell you, we'll just do it our own way. We'll concentrate on ourselves. Blah-de-blah-de-blah. Football is a little bit more complex than that. So I think how they respond to an L being out is going to depend possibly on some of the things that they look at and they've identified within Birmingham City's lineup and then within QPR's lineup as well. You may well see two different things happening with regards to both of those games. I think it's a really tough one. I think, as I said earlier, you could look at a formation change, but we touched on this last week. personally, you two lads might disagree. I don't think Sheffield United look anywhere near as effective when they play with a back four as they do when they go with the three. And that's something that they're going to have to address in time as well, because there will be periods when they're going to have to go to a back four. They do need to be better at doing that. I think, as I said, it sounds almost ridiculous, and there's probably something that's staring me in the face that I'm not looking at. But I think they've got to give consideration. I'm not saying this is the right thing to do. They've got to give consideration to playing Raider at wing back, because what that would allow them to do then is just basically fix one problem with one solution. I think the danger of trying to be too clever about this, or possibly even give someone from the academy a go, but I think the danger of trying to be too clever about what they're doing here is that they could, by attempting to solve one problem, they could just create another three or four in other areas of the pitch as well.
Danny, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I agree with James in terms of solving, you know, causing issues and solving them. But I just think that it's got to the point now where I don't see a scenario. For me personally, if I was a manager, obviously taking into account everything we said about, you know, nullifying the opposition and, you know, looking at their threats, I don't see a way of currently carrying on with the three. I just don't see how it's going to, you know, obviously there are kind of options in terms of square pegs and round holes, playing Kieran Gordon, playing Basham on the left, playing, you know, youngsters like Brooks on the left, or, you know, Raider Kadra on the left. But I just think, it's got to the point now where he's going to have to consider playing a four. I take the point that they do look more disjointed when it's not a five or a three at the back. But I just think that it's just got to the point of ridiculousness now where you're playing too many sort of round, you know, square pegs in round holes. You know, does Kieran Gordon come in on the right? That's playing Basham on the left. Does that take away the, you know, if you're not going to have the right and left centre backs overlapping, then is there actually any point in playing the three? Do you know what I mean? If they're not going to get forward like, you know, they have done in the past, then is there any point in kind of persevering with that? For me, I would be tempted to look at a four, you know, Baldock, Basham, Egan, Norrington, Davis. I think that allows different combinations going forward. It maybe allows you to play, you know, Tommy Doyle from the start with Norwood, then get Sander forward, get Illiman forward, get, you know, Kadra maybe a bit further forward, McAtee. Just allows you to get that extra kind of attacking player on the pitch, doesn't it, going forward? You know, two games at home, I think it's a good time to kind of play that extra attacking player when you've got the, you know, that kind of home advantage, the crowd behind you, you know, kind of get at QPR and Birmingham from the start with those extra players. You know, maybe if these were two away games at Birmingham QPR, I'd be kind of advocating a very different approach. But I think on the front foot at home, you can maybe get away with that a little bit more. So I'd personally go to kind of, you know, a four at the back, Norwood and Doyle kind of anchoring in midfield, and then the rest of the forward lads you could pick from any of, you know, six or seven, couldn't you really? Kind of let them off the leash and go and cause some havoc. So having said that, expect to be a 3-5-2 at the weekend from Paul. Now I've said all that.
Yeah, we just don't know. I'd probably, if only for this first one, under the circumstances, I would probably go for four at the back. I don't know. It's such a tricky one. I kind of feel it just means that you're absolutely right when you say they're not as good as a back four, certainly from an attacking point of view. But then again, as Danny says, if you get those extra players, if they can, I think basically what we're saying and what we can agree with here is, given the number of games that are coming up over the night, I think there's, over the course of the next 5 weeks, I think there's something like 9 games. Certainly 8 anyway. I think it might be a case of just grinding out this next month or so and getting by as best they can. And if we play a four, then as Danny says, they can get enough attacking players on the pitch to the point where you can maybe just sneak a goal from somewhere, shut that game off and move on to the next one as quickly as possible and hope for the best. It's not you know, I'm not a coach. I don't know how it works really, but you know, I just kind of feel like if you've got the personnel there to play a four, just do it and get this next month over with. Grind out as many points as you possibly can, and I hope that Amirovic's injury isn't quite as bad as has been made out, and he's maybe only back in 2 or 3 weeks rather than the kind of 4 to 6 as we've been told by our friends over there. I completely took a blank of where he was from. The Bosnia, isn't it? I took a complete blank on that there.
It's one bit of the Balkans you're now going to have to miss out, Chris, if you ever go over there on holiday.
Yeah. I mean, it's got two names. It should have been Evil Dicks.
Yeah,
one of them at least.
No chance, didn't you?
Right. I'll go for it. We're going to wrap things up. I'll go for a quick fire prediction on, well, what we'll say is how many points we're going to get. I keep saying I'm going to get in trouble. How many points are United going to get over the course of the next two games? Well, what would be acceptable, do you think, or what do you think they're going to get from it? Danny, go ahead.
What would be acceptable? 6. 6 would be very acceptable. I accept that. Possibly, yeah. I don't see, you know, with the way they've been going, with the confidence in the group, the way, obviously, and that was a big blow, but the way that this team has sort of adapted to injury setbacks like that, you know, it's not the first time they'll have to sort of cope with a big injury loss, and they've kind of done that very well so far. So I don't see any reason why they can't grind out 2 wins from these 2 games. Not saying it'll be easy by any stretch of the imagination. I don't want this to end up in the away dressing room at 5-3 on Saturday as a bit of motivation by anyone getting ahead of themselves at Sheffield United. But I don't see a reason why they can't target. Well, they will be targeting 2 wins from 2, won't they? That's just the way that they go about things. You know, 4 would not be the end of the world if you draw one with the other. But I don't see a reason why they can't take 6 points from these 2 games. That's the promotion formula. Win your home games, draw your away games, and you'll be there or thereabouts in the season. So if we stick to that, I'll you know, 6 points would do very nicely for me.
James,
I think just because I think I agree with Danny. Sheffield United are obviously more than capable of winning both games. I think just when you look at it, put these two matches into context. If you look at the circumstances surrounding them, they've obviously got a big problem to solve this weekend and not an awful lot of time to solve it in as well, because Sheffield United have probably been handicapped more by the international break than any other team, not just because of the momentum, but by the fact that they've had so many players away and they've got a big defensive problem to solve with effectively 2 sessions on the training ground. So I don't know which way round these results are going to go, but I think what would be, given what they're facing, given the problems that United are grappling with at the moment, which sounds faintly ridiculous given that they're 3 points clear at the top of the table, I think 4 points from these next 2 games would be a really, really creditable. I think that would be an excellent return.
I agree with James. I think on any double header, particularly coming after the international break, if you can take 4 points from that, then you should probably be more than happy with that. But obviously, we'll take 6.
Getting carried away, Chris. That's what it is. Getting carried away by this.
You're
following Sheffield United for 20 years. You know, you should think you probably should not get too ahead of yourself. But
in that sense. If it was going to be a proper United fan, I'll take 2 points and move on. Right, that's us for this week, lads. Thanks for joining us once again. We'll be back next week for a look back on these 2 games and, of course, a look ahead to the next fixtures and everything that's happening in between. Thanks for joining us.